This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, August 20th. It's been a great week on this end. I hope it's been a great week for everybody at home. We are halfway through the month of August. Summer's flying by. Kids are going back to school. I actually just went on a little road trip myself, went up to Cooperstown, New York, and it's incredible. The Baseball Hall of Fame. Obviously, the Tigers are in a pennant race, playing much better baseball here in the month of August. College football will be kicking off at the end of the month. The Detroit Lions wrap up training camp this week. So there's a lot going on the sports landscape. And high school football gets underway at the end of this month as well. And Sportscaster and WJR have partnered once again for Drive to the Game Season 2. More on that, about how you can tune in every Friday night here through the high school football season and listen in. So we're going to start there with high school football, and we're going to bring in our youngest contributor to Sportscaster.com, Ryder Sloan, our roving reporter. Ryder, welcome back to the show, brother.
Hey, Johnny, I'm excited to be back.
Well, it's good to have you here once again. And I know you've been bouncing around doing several things this summer, but we're going to start with football because you're a football player yourself.
Yeah, in terms of football, my season was cut short because I have a hairline fracture in my knee, but I should be back soon on the field, hopefully.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear about the hairline fracture. Obviously, that you know, injuries are a big part of the game. You know it. I know it. And anytime you put the shoulder pads on, you know, you run a little bit of risk there. But hairline fracture, we can manage. You're playing for the Birmingham Patriots. I know you're working in the backfield, also working as a quarterback as well. So we're going to be watching your career as it unfolds, and hopefully it's a bright future for you. Your commentary this week focuses more on some high school players that we should look for coming into the 2025 season. What position in particular have you focused on?
Quarterback.
I thought you might say that. And why is quarterback? Why do you think that's such an important position?
Well, as some would say, quarterback is the hardest position to play in sports, and they lead the team. They take the snap. The ball has to go through them to get to the other players. They're the commanders of the team, and it's a very fun position to play too.
It is, and you got to be cerebral and obviously athletic, and there's just a lot that goes into it. There's a ton of work that goes into it, and there's a lot of really good high school quarterbacks across the state of Michigan, as we know. You focused on five quarterbacks in which to watch that fans that may need to familiarize themselves with. Let's listen in to Ryder Sloan's commentary on the five QBs heading into the upcoming high school football season. Have a listen.
Football season is almost here, my favorite time of the year. And today we're going to be looking at some high school players, but more specifically, top five high school quarterbacks in Michigan. The first guy on my list is a senior from East Kentwood. He's on most people's lists, and he's a guy to really watch out for. His name is Cade Kaufman. He's 6'2", 200 pounds, and he's committed to Michigan State. He's one of the best players on the west side of Michigan, and he threw for nearly 1,600 yards and 12 touchdowns in 2024. The next guy on my list is a sophomore from Detroit Cass Tech. His name is Donald Tabron II. He's 6'4", 185 pounds, and he stepped into the starting role as a freshman in 2024. He threw for 1,656 yards and 17 touchdowns last season. The third guy on my list is Tommy Carr. The senior from Saline is 6'3", 185 pounds, and he's the grandson of the legendary Michigan football coach, Lloyd Carr. He committed to Miami, Ohio, and is coming off a breakout season for Saline in his first season. He threw for more than 2,300 yards and 26 touchdowns and rushed for 6 scores. The next quarterback on my list is the senior for Notre Dame Pontiac Prep. His name is Sam Stowe, and he's 6'5", 200 pounds. Stowe led Notre Dame Pontiac Prep to the Division V state championship title as a junior. He had more than 2,700 yards and 44 total touchdowns, 37 passing touchdowns, and 7 rushing, including 293 yards and 4 touchdowns in the division title game. Last but not least, we have Jake Morrow from Grand Blanc High School. He's a senior coming in at 6 feet, 180 pounds, and he enters his final season with 2 years of starting experience as a dual threat quarterback. In 2024, he threw for more than 2,400 yards and rushed for more than 800 and accounted for 34 total touchdowns. Of course, a lot can change throughout the season, but that's what makes high school football high school football. These are my top five high school quarterbacks in Michigan, but who do you think is going to end up in the top five by the end of the season? It's going to be a very fun season to watch.
All right, so those are five names to look for. Obviously, there's a very deep talent pool, and it could be some surprise names that emerge as the season goes along. And Drive to the Game, again, coming up here on WJR and sportscaster.com. Week one is Thursday, August 28th, Lake Orion versus Northville. It's part of the Amazon Prep Kickoff Classic at Wayne State University. So encourage everybody to tune in here on WJR for that. All right, Ryder. So very good stuff on the high school front and very well thought out, well constructed. But you're not just sitting around this summer kicking it around. You're roving around. You stopped by a training camp for the Detroit Lions. How was training camp?
It was great. The team looked really good. And I had the very special chance to interview Isaac Tesla, the rookie receiver from Arkansas.
Yeah, this kid's kind of emerged, right? He's a, I wouldn't say sleeper pick, but I mean, you know, third round pick. It wasn't like a highly heralded guy necessarily coming out of college. What's he like?
He is a great guy. And it's just so special that we found someone like that. He deserves all the love he's getting. He's a guy that you want to succeed.
Yeah, Isaac Tesla wasn't really recruited all that heavily coming out of high school, right? He went to Unity Christian and then ended up going to Hillsdale College. So it's kind of a success story. Well, not kind of. I mean, it really is. You know, here's a guy who has dreams like you, like I did, of playing at the highest level. And he kind of took this unconventional route. Now here he is catching balls for the Lions. Like, it's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, I think when the Lions drafted him in the third round, I think we all said out loud, who? Like, we had no idea who that was. But now, I mean, I think he's going to be known heading into the season.
Yeah, once he merged onto the scene, we looked at him a little bit, you know, came from Arkansas, but before that at Hillsdale College, which is not necessarily a football powerhouse, if we're being honest about it. But yeah. The one thing that, and we'll get to your interview with him because, or at least a snippet of it, the one thing that I really appreciated is that he seems like a very authentic, you know, a humble guy. Was there anything interesting that he told you that maybe surprised you?
He has a cat.
That was it. There you go. That's it. He's got a cat, Kiki. You know, he's a cat dad. And I appreciate that. I appreciate his willingness to share that with you. All right. So we're going to listen to a snippet of Ryder Sloan's interview with Detroit Lions promising young rookie receiver Isaac Tesla.
Your path to the NFL has been a very interesting one. You had three D2 offers coming out of high school playing as quarterback. You obviously committed to Hillsdale and then eventually transferred to Arkansas playing as wide receiver. Now you're living every NFL fan's dream playing for your childhood favorite team. How does that feel?
Man, how much time do you have? Man, I mean, it's amazing. I think about it, you know, when I really sit back and think about it, just to be in this position, I'm so incredibly blessed by God and just by everyone around me. I have countless people supporting me back home and lifting me up in prayer every single day, and I think that's just been the biggest thing for me. I didn't have, you know, everything didn't really go my way in my college career. The way I wanted it to, but I just trusted God's plan for my life, and he's been very faithful to me, and just to be in this position, I think is a testament to his faithfulness in my life.
All right, so that's just a brief snippet of the interview, the one-on-one that you, Ryder, did with Isaac Tesla, and I'll tell you what, so if you want to listen to the rest of the interview, go to Ryder's channel on sportscaster.com and just search for it there. But the part I really liked about it, man, is things don't always go the way we had planned or that we have charted out. And faith is a big part of his life. And sometimes a hug from mom can carry you through some difficult times, you know?
Yeah, it was a great answer and a very relatable one.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Whether you're playing for the Birmingham Patriots or the Detroit Lions, you know, sometimes when you have a bad day, it's okay to get a little hug and move forward. Well, good stuff, man. And enjoy the rest of your summer. I always enjoy talking to you. And get healed up so you can get back on the gridiron and some young sportscaster, aspiring sportscaster, will be interviewing you at Lions training camp one day. What do you know?
Yeah, thank you. It was great doing this.
All right, man. Yeah, always appreciate it. That was Ryder Sloan giving us his take on the five high school quarterbacks in which we should be paying attention to heading into the upcoming season. And also a very nice one-on-one interview with Lions rookie receiver Isaac Tesla, who's making a name for himself as a fan favorite here through training camp. You know, high school football practice is in full swing as teams are gearing up for the upcoming 2025 season. We just heard a little bit earlier from sportscaster contributor Ryder Sloan on his top five high school quarterbacks to watch for heading into the year. And I remember last fall, it was late last year, the MHSAA, the Michigan High School Athletic Association, announced it would once again be reclassifying schools beginning this August. And since it is August of this year, we want to get the latest on what this reclassification means. So this isn't uncommon for the MHSAA to reclassify schools, and mostly it impacts, you know, the high school football season. So the reclassification essentially would be for the next 3 years. So 2025, 26, and 27. And then that goes into effect now. And then the regions and classifications would be integrated into all sports, not just high school football, but that would be basketball, baseball, softball, and volleyball as well. Gavin Velesevic is from De La Salle Collegiate. He's an aspiring broadcaster, and he is a member of the sportscaster.com program. Here is Gavin's commentary on what we need to know and the biggest takeaways from the new reclassification.
For all the MHSAA football fans out there, there's a little shakeup this year coming in the divisions. 64 teams this year are going to be changing divisions based on enrollment. Usually 63 teams are assigned to each division in football. And this year we have a little bit of shakeup, you know, with some of the most powerful schools in the state, actually. For example, Jackson Lumen Christi, even though they're originally supposed to be in D8, they've been moved up to D6 again after opting in again. The powerhouse that won the D2 state championship last year, Orchard Lake, is going to stay in Division 2. And Linden High School, who had the chance to stay in D4, is going to come back up to D3 again. And Oak Park has the same as they did last year, from Division 3 to Division 2. Overall, it may be a media capturing event, but in reality, it's based on enrollment, how many students each school has, and where, you know, the competitiveness might be. For example, with Orchard Lake St. Mary's, they could opt into D3, but their school's large enough to stay into D2. For example, where I'm a student at, De La Salle, this year, there was a lot of media attention around us kind of switching back to D3 where we had been in prior years. And I got a statement from our head coach last night. He was mentioning the fact that the Catholic League has always been primarily D3 and D2. At some points, you know, it was beating up on each other in the regular season, and then it'd be uncompetitive in the playoffs. For example, our enrollment during the COVID year, he said, we could go up to D2 because De La Salle had such a high enrollment. But now our numbers put us back more to D3 and a more realistic range. And I think people need to understand that it's not all about the competitiveness, the talent, the skill, or ability. It's not about winning football games. It's about putting you in a realistic situation where your enrollment meets the standards. And I think that's important for people to understand sort of over time. It's not all about getting the win on Friday nights. It's kind of being, where does our school fit best in this? And I think that's what we can take away from the 64 teams that change up this year. And for certain, there's going to be a different look. There might be a different look in the playoffs. Not all the teams might make it. That's just the reality. And that it's going to be a shakeup. It's going to be a change. But I think overall, it's going to be positive. And this happens every year. And even though there's heavy media coverage this year, it happens every single year. Enrollment shifts. It's not all about winning on Friday nights. It's about putting the school in a realistic situation. And I think that's what most of these schools have done.
That was sportscaster.com contributor Gavin Velesevic from De La Salle Collegiate. You know, one of the takeaways there, the enrollment shifts, and then, you know, the idea of putting schools in realistic situations to be ultimately successful. So obviously a lot to chew on as we head into the 2025 season. And then over the next 3 years, we'll see how everything plays out, and reclassification once again will be on the docket, I would assume. I do want to let everybody know that Sportscaster and WJR has partnered again for season 2 of Drive to the Game. That'll be every Friday night. You can get your high school football fix right here on the WJR airwaves. Week one is coming up already, Thursday, August the 28th. Lake Orion versus Northville. That'll be at 7 o'clock. It is part of the Amazon Prep Kickoff Classic at Wayne State University. So season two of Drive to the Game. We're looking forward to it. High school football season, nothing like it. No better way to spend a Friday night. But if you're on the road and can't get out there, be sure to tune into WJR and we'll get you up to speed on everything you need to know week in, week out during the high school football season. I'm Johnny Kane, your host, and we are talking NBA because the NBA season will be here before long. Regular season doesn't get underway until middle to late October, but the preseason schedule gets underway in early October. There will be a lot of intriguing storylines heading into the 2025-26 season for sure. It'll be interesting to see if the East is stronger than the West this year. And obviously the Pistons with the turnaround that they had from a season ago, tripling the win total and obviously being the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, that's kind of the bar. And now everybody says, how much higher can we climb in the East? And so it's going to be exciting, obviously, you know, watching the season unfold. I know Media Day is coming up on August the 29th. That's a Friday. So I'll be heading over there talking to a lot of the players, a lot of the new faces that have come into the fold. And certainly excited for what should be really another exciting season in the NBA here in Detroit. So we'll be following that intimately. But again, if you look across the league, you know, some of the storylines that exist, especially out west, one of the compelling storylines is what's happening in Los Angeles. And we're not talking about the Lakers necessarily because as LeBron James will be back for another season. We hear plenty about them and the goings on in that market. But really the focus of this week's commentary is on the LA Clippers, which is the second most talked about franchise in that city. Obviously, James Harden being the catalyst for that team, Kawhi Leonard, when healthy, but that's a big when. And can he stay healthy this year? They've added some veteran presence to an already, you know, I hate to say old, but in terms of high school athletes and in terms of the NBA body, it is an older roster. It is a veteran-laden team out in Los Angeles, and I feel like their window to win is now, as it was last year, but they were bouncing the first round. And how much longer will that window be open for them to contend out in the Western Conference? Matt O'Brien is a sportscaster.com contributor. You can find him on social channels under the handle Boston Buckets. So he's a big Celtics guy, but he takes a deep dive into what's happening out in Los Angeles with the Clippers heading into the upcoming season.
The Los Angeles Clippers already had one of the oldest rosters in the NBA, and they just went ahead and got even older. The Clippers added the legendary guard Chris Paul back to their roster after a long year departure. Paul last played for the Clippers way back in 2017. But the only reason the Clippers were able to acquire Paul in the first place is all because of James Harden. James Harden had the option to sign for $54 million a year. But he made a smart team move and he took a slight discount, taking around $41 million a year. That extra money allowed the Clippers to acquire Paul in free agency. But it's not only Chris Paul the Clippers went out and acquired this offseason, they went ahead and acquired two other veteran presences, Brooke Lopez and Bradley Beal. Now, if the Clippers took these three new signings, James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, they would have the oldest starting lineup in the NBA. Now, naturally, this won't happen because of other younger talents they have on the team, like Zubac, their starting center. But it is interesting to see this Clippers team get older rather than younger. The Clippers did just get defeated in the first round in this year's playoffs. And it's really not looking too hopeful for them, especially now that the average age of the players on their roster totals to 33 years old. Last year's oldest roster went to the Philadelphia 76ers, who was barely over 28 years old. And even if we look at a team like the NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder, they were around 25 and a half. Now, granted, that was the youngest championship team we've seen in quite a while, but if anything, I think that's a sign. Maybe creating an older roster isn't necessarily the best way to win a championship. But the thing with this Clippers squad is it's not just the old guys. As we mentioned earlier, they have players like Zubac and the newly acquired John Collins. That's going to allow some of these older guys to come off the bench as role players. And I think the Clippers' power really lies on three things. The first one being James Harden. If James Harden can play at a somewhat elite level, the Clippers are going to be good, there's no doubt about it. He was pretty much single-handedly carrying them last season, but that does fall on the second thing carrying the Clippers' season, Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard is no doubt a masterclass basketball player, but his issues rely on his injuries. Kawhi Leonard misses a ton of time, it happens very consistently. But when he's on the court, the Clippers are a million times better. If we could somehow get a full season of basketball out of Kawhi Leonard, and he's healthy and fully warmed up for the playoffs, I think the Clippers are extremely dangerous. So while 1 and 2 are definitely our biggest contributors to the Clippers' success, I think the third factor is super important as well, and that's Bradley Beal. Beal is an interesting signing for the Clippers because he's coming off a pretty atrocious stint in Phoenix. He was one of the highest paid players in the league when he got there, and he did basically nothing to prove his worth. Now, luckily for the Clippers, they got him on a much better deal, only paying him around $11 million for 2 years. So if he doesn't end up working out, it's not a huge deal. But if he does end up playing somewhat well, maybe even to the caliber of a near third option, that would be absolutely huge for the Los Angeles Clippers and would definitely help them in this playoff push. Another huge issue for this Clippers team is that they don't have a lot of draft capital in the near future. They do possess a 2027 pick, but the Oklahoma City Thunder reserve the right to swap theirs for it, meaning that they will get a first round draft selection, but it might not be the best player available. And other than that, the only pick that they possess that they completely own to themselves is all the way in 2030. So if I had to take a guess, I believe this is probably the last stint for the Los Angeles Clippers. There's not much going on for them after this group. And now the question to ask is this team good enough to win a championship? Well, we didn't get a ton of playoff experience from the Clippers last round. As we mentioned earlier, they did get bounced in the first round. But it is interesting to note how that series went. They were pinned up against the Denver Nuggets. And not only did they have a good series against the Nuggets, they took them to Game 7. And for many, including myself, I actually thought the Clippers were going to win that Game 7. And I think definitely the most important thing to note in this series is that Kawhi was playing. And when Kawhi plays, the Clippers are a million times better. Had that Game 7 just went a little bit differently, the Clippers would have been pinned up in the second round against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And as we just mentioned, the Clippers took the Nuggets to Game 7. Well, the Nuggets took the Thunder to Game 7, who eventually went on to win the NBA championship. I'm not saying I think the Clippers could have beat the Thunder, and I'm not saying that I think they would have taken them to Game 7. But it is interesting to look at the numbers on paper like that. Maybe there is a world where this Clippers team could have put up a good fight against our reigning champs. Hey, maybe there's even a world where they beat them. In that perfect world, the Clippers would have been up against the Minnesota Timberwolves in the Western Conference Finals, where they definitely would have had way more experience than that team. And the Timberwolves didn't do much against the Thunder, so I'm sure a Clippers team on that high of a run would definitely have defeated Minnesota. Would they have beaten the Pacers in the finals? Now we might be getting a little far along. But it is interesting to see this aging Clippers team, and I'm super excited to see what they are going to do with a playoff run.
That was Matt O'Brien, a sportscaster.com contributor, with his take on the LA Clippers' chances heading into the 25-26 season. Again, the NBA season tips off in October. The Detroit Pistons open their preseason slate October 6th at Memphis. It is our final segment, and I'm joined by another Johnny, which is always a good thing. Somewhat rare, to be honest with you. Johnny Oxenfeld, a student at the University of Rhode Island. Welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, always good. And I know your area of expertise as a sportscaster contributor is with the UFC. And there's some, you know, I would say some news with respect to becoming more accessible to more fans. I think it's a sport that continues to grow. And I think the UFC is figuring out, hey, let's make it more accessible and let's see this growth rate grow exponentially.
Yeah, totally. I mean, starting 2026, the new Paramount deal, I think that's incredible for the fans. So we'll definitely dive into that.
I know you've been on the show before. And for those that may not be as familiar with the sport, what was it for you, and I love watching UFC, but I know it's not for everybody. What was it for you that kind of grabbed you and pulled you in? Do you remember where and when?
Yeah, of course, it's a pretty niche sport. It's violent, obviously, so it's not going to be for everybody. But I think beginning of like early high school, I'd say I got really into it. I started with boxing when I was younger. I always appreciated boxing for like the art it was, and I think that's kind of how I got into MMA. I always loved boxing. But I feel like MMA is more exciting because you have the striking, you have the grappling, the wrestling. So I think with combat sports, I appreciate the art form that it is and then everything else that comes with it.
Who currently would you say is helping to drive the sport forward? Like, who are some names right now that maybe people aren't as familiar with as a household name, but you feel like is kind of the torchbearer to lead this thing forward?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think we're in a state right now where we don't have too many big names, household names that even if you're not a combat sports fan, you know them. And I think with this new Paramount deal, we could get a lot of those names. But right now, I think a few guys that could drive this sport forward are the likes of Ilya Topuria. He is, I think, maybe one of the best fighters ever. The way he throws his combinations, he's so well-rounded. He has so much power. And right now, he's maybe having the best prime we've ever seen. He's got a unique personality. So I think he could be a pretty big star in the sport. This past weekend, we saw Khamzat Chimaev put on one of the most dominant performances we've ever seen in the octagon. He also has a very unique personality and is one of the more dominant fighters this sport has ever seen. So I think he could be a big name in the future. And then, of course, maybe the biggest name in the past few years is Alex Pereira. A lot of people know him. He's been super active recently. He's fighting for the title once again in a few months. So I think he's a big name. I think those are probably the three biggest names we have in the sport right now.
Sure. Johnny Oxenfeld from University of Rhode Island, sportscaster.com contributor, one of our newest contributors. Give us a quick sense before we get into your commentary on the new major media rights deal. Give us a sense of what it's like being a content creator on the daily and how locked in you have to be when people are looking to you like, hey, Johnny, yo, what do I need to know? I mean, you really don't you don't get too many days off, I would imagine.
No, there's really no days off. I've been doing this on TikTok for 2.5 years. I mean, I started in March of 2022, I believe. So it's been quite a while, maybe 23, I forget. But I've been doing this for a while. And to grow on social media, I think the biggest thing, no matter where your content is or whatnot, but I think you have to be consistent. That is the number one thing. So if you're posting every day, no matter how good the content is, of course, it'll improve over time. My first videos were terrible compared to what they are now. But if you're consistent over a period of time, I think you're going to grow. I mean, for me, I was posting 3 videos a day for like a year and a half straight. I didn't take a single day off. So it gets overwhelming at points. Of course, it seems simple. Oh, you're just posting a little video. But after a while, the burnout gets real. It does. So you have to just be consistent. You have to grind through it. And finding video ideas are hard. I mean, after doing this for so long, it comes to a point where, what do I even talk about?
Yeah.
That's why I like the UFC, because there's technically no off season. So there's always fresh things happening and there's content to make. But yeah, it gets hard after a while, but you just got to keep pushing through.
Yeah, good stuff. We'll keep pushing through. And as we know, UFC and a lot of mixed martial arts, it used to be pretty much a pay-per-view sport. That's no longer the case. It is more accessible to all. Johnny Oxenfeld, student at URI, with more on that in this week's commentary.
Starting in 2026, the UFC will be streaming their fights on Paramount Plus and CBS. They just signed a $7.7 billion deal spanning across 7 years, officially meaning the end to the ESPN and UFC partnership. Now, for reference, the ESPN deal was 7 years for $550 million, and this new Paramount Plus deal is 7 years for $1.1 billion. So it is pretty much double the ESPN deal, and per event, the UFC will be making roughly $25 million. So that is an incredible amount, and probably the biggest talking point from this deal, absolutely the biggest talking point from this deal, is the end to the pay-per-view model. Starting in 2026 with this new deal, the UFC and Paramount Plus will not have a pay-per-view model. There will just be a subscription you need to sign up for, just like Paramount Plus is right now, and then you will have every single fight that you want for $8 a month at the minimum. Paramount Plus has 2 subscriptions that you could sign up for that won't change in 2026. You could spend $8 to get Paramount Plus with ads or $13 to get it without ads. And as I said, that won't change when they start streaming UFC fights. Now, compared to ESPN, which we're in the ESPN phase, I guess you could say right now, it is $13 for ESPN Plus. You need to pay that monthly to watch every single fight, whether it be fight night or pay-per-view. And then to get the pay-per-view on top of that, you need to spend $80. The UFC have roughly 1 pay-per-view a month. So you do the math, that's $13 plus $80. That's over $100 a month. And then if you add that up through the span of 12 months through the year, that's over $1,000 to watch every UFC fight that you might want right now with ESPN. Now, if you head over to Paramount, which we're doing, and say you only want to spend $8 a month, easy. That is only $100 roughly. That's pretty damn good.
I think this is fantastic news for the UFC and UFC fans across the world, because now the UFC will be more accessible to everybody. Say you can't spend $80 a month, $13 a month on ESPN Plus. Absolutely fair. That's hard for a lot of people. Now you could spend $8 a month and get absolutely every fight. So I think this is a big win for the UFC and for the fans, because now the UFC has a much larger demographic that they could promote to. More people are going to be able to get into the sport. And in turn, the UFC might make actually more money. Of course, they're not, you know, handing out $80 for a pay-per-view, but now more people are going to be getting on that subscription to watch every fight. The UFC demographic is going to be a whole lot bigger. And for the fan side, it's $8 a month. It's $8 a month. That's absolutely brilliant. And as I said, the UFC is going to have an expanded demographic. Does that mean they're going to put on better fights and better cards because they can make more money now? They have a larger demographic that they can promote to. When we had the pay-per-views, year after year, the UFC kind of knew who they're promoting to. They know their demographic with the pay-per-views. But now, with this new model, no pay-per-view, it's an easy subscription, they have a lot more people they can promote to. So do they really, really stack these fight cards? That's what I want to see. Dana White also briefly mentioned that these fight cards are not going to be watered down. If anything, they're going to be better. So that is also something we love to hear. He also mentioned that fighter bonuses will go up. So if you are not familiar with the UFC, if you have one of the best knockouts on a card, say you put on a performance of the night, you will usually get $50,000 on top of your base salary. But now with this new Paramount Plus deal, Dana White said fighter pay, the base pay will be increased and bonuses will also be increased. So this is a huge W for the UFC, for the fighters, and for the fans, in my opinion. With this current ESPN deal and the pay-per-view model, a lot of fans in the community have felt like these pay-per-views have been watered down. There's just way too many fight cards with not enough big names. So I hope that changes with the Paramount Plus deal. And I think it's absolutely going to. Because as I said, the demographic that the UFC can promote to now is so much bigger. So I think they're going to make these cards better. I mean, I could ask you guys who aren't in the UFC and really know nothing about it. Can you name an active UFC fighter right now? I think it's pretty hard to. I mean, the biggest stars we have in the sport right now are the likes of Ilya Topuria, Alex Pereira, Khamzat Chimaev. You guys might have no idea who these guys are. And sure, that's a problem. That is a problem for the UFC. So once they switch over to Paramount Plus, they can really start to promote these guys because you don't need to spend a lot of money to see them. They can really start to promote these names. And I hope by the year 2027, 28, 29, we have some household names in not just mixed martial arts and combat sports, but in the sports world. I want to see the likes of Ilya Topuria and Khamzat Chimaev being known to the wider audience. And I can see that absolutely happening during this Paramount Plus era, you could call it. I've made countless videos on my own covering this topic, but I truly think for the athletes, for the UFC as a company, making more money for them and for the fans, I think this is a huge win for everybody across the board. I think this sport in 3, 4, 5 years is going to be much more mainstream than it is right now. I think it's going to be accessible to the wider audience. UFC fighters are going to be making a lot more money, which they deserve. The UFC could be making more money. The promotion for these fights are going to be up, in my opinion. I think this is a massive, massive turning point for combat sports. I absolutely love this deal with the UFC and Paramount Plus.
Our thanks to Johnny Oxenfeld for his take on the MMA and UFC kind of abandoning what was just a pay-per-view system. And now with an opportunity to make that product or make their sports available to more, to a wider audience. And I think as that sport continues to grow, the more accessibility the viewers have, it'll be an exponential rise in the attention in viewership that the UFC will get. So our thanks to Johnny Oxenfeld. He's a student at the University of Rhode Island and one of our sportscaster.com contributors. Always does a nice job with his focus on the UFC. Also want to thank Matt O'Brien. He is a sportscaster.com contributor who took a deep dive into the NBA and what's happening out on the West Coast, the left coast, the Los Angeles Clippers heading into the 25-26 season. And then on a high school level, we want to thank Gavin Velesovic from De La Salle Collegiate. He's an aspiring broadcaster and part of the Sportscaster program. As he talked about the MHSAA reclassification and realignment heading into the upcoming high school football season. And our first guest on the show today, Ryder Sloan, did such a nice job in talking with Detroit Lions rookie receiver Isaac Tesla. So a nice one-on-one from Lions training camp. If you want to hear Ryder's interview, just go to our sportscaster.com and go to Ryder's channel. You can hear that interview in its entirety or any of the interviews that you heard here on this week's show on Open Mic. Just log on to sportscaster.com and you can search your way through. As always, we appreciate you guys tuning in. We're here every Wednesday night from 8 to 9 on WJR Radio. And with high school football season coming up in just a couple of weeks now, there will be plenty for you to listen to and plenty for us to talk about on Open Mic over the next several weeks as we transition from summer into fall. But thanks again to all our guests being on the show today, and thanks again for listening. I'm Johnny Kane, your host, and we will see you again next time.